You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and welcome to our show this morning on this rather overcast, rainy morning. We will try to brighten up your day a little bit as we talk about various public policy issues here for the next hour or so on our program. Today, we have a number of topics that we're going to be talking about. We're going to kick off the show here this morning by talking to a guest in studio. Her name is Maria Munoz, who is going to enlighten us a little bit about some of the issues and challenges facing some of her colleagues as it relates to their immigration status. Sometimes they're called Dream Act children and some other descriptions as well. And we're going to talk about that for the first part of our show here for the first 15, 20 minutes or so. After that, we're going to do a brief update on the status of something that's been in the news for the past, gosh, it seems like forever, but the last couple months or so. And that is what's going on with Catholic Charities lawsuit with the state of Illinois and our rights to continue doing foster care and adoption under the new Civil Unions Act, and where that is in the court process and what's going on with the not only the court, but another agency that's been affected by the court's action and the legislature's inaction, Evangelical Children and Family Services. Ken Withrow, the executive director of that agency, will be on to discuss how that they're being impacted by the law. And then finally, the remaining part of the program, we're going to be talking about marriage and what's going on in the state of California with regard to the Perry v. Schwarzenegger case and how that could impact what's going on in Illinois and other states as well. If you want to join the conversation, the phone number is area code 312-255-8408. So without waiting any further, let's just delve into the first topic this morning. We're lucky enough to have with us this morning, as I said at the outset, Maria Munoz, who comes to us from St. Clair Montefalco Parish, that general area. Maria, welcome.
Hi, good morning, Bob.
It's great to have you here and talk a little bit about something that affects you personally, and it affects your friends and your colleagues. And you know, I think sometimes on this program and in the public policy arena, we talk about these issues and we come to decisions based on the information we read or we hear about things or we listen to some commentator on television. But you're going to bring a different perspective. You're living this issue. And I think what you're living is a situation where you're seeing, you know, friends and colleagues who are having problems. Okay, let's talk a little bit about, I know some of your friends who have, they've graduated from high school? They've graduated from college?
And college, yes.
And they were what? And they were, how did they come here? And describe the whole sort of situation.
The whole situation?
To us.
Yeah. All right. Well, they call themselves dreamers, right?
Dreamers.
For the whole fact that they come from another country without them making the decision of coming here. Obviously, they're young. They're probably like 10, 11, 12. Mm-hmm. My friends personally were like 10, 9, 3, 11. They range from that age. So they come here. They start going to school like every other normal kid. They get to high school. They finish high school. But before finishing, when they start applying for colleges, they realize mm-hmm. they cannot apply for any financial aid, scholarships, or anything along those sorts of lines. And once they do that, they try to find a job in order to start, you know,
right, a career.
Getting some income mm-hmm. or anything like that, in order for them to start, you know, paying for classes. And it's really hard to get jobs.
And go ahead.
Well, after that, they try their best to go to a community college or even big ones like UW-Madison. I have a friend who went to UW-Madison.
Okay.
And they finish. They get their career. And once they finish their career, they're volunteering or doing every other sort of thing in order for them to get some sort of like background, you know, professional experience.
Right, experience.
Exactly.
Right, right. Because like we all did out of college. Right.
Exactly.
You know, it's so true when you graduate from high school or community college or a four-year college. Yeah, you may have that certificate, but you have to talk somebody into paying you or giving you the opportunity to prove yourself.
Exactly.
And I think even if these kids can do that, if these young adults can do that, then they have the added problem of status.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because, I mean, for example, my friend who lives in Wisconsin right now, we all graduated from there. I have other friends who graduated from the School of Education. She did too. And they're all working, you know, as teachers and going with their careers and doing everything. And my friend is like stuck.
Stuck.
She's just there. She can't.
So what does that person do? You know, like you said, they probably can get volunteer things for free, maybe. Mm-hmm. But at the end of they're not going to be able to be. They're not going to get a job, right? That's because you can't work without documentation.
You can't. But there are some jobs. They paid you under the table.
Under the table.
Exactly.
That's where they're going. That's a limited career opportunity, though, no matter how talented the individual might be. We're talking to Maria Munoz, who has got some personal experience with, now you phrased it, what, the dream?
The Dreamers.
The Dreamers.
Yeah.
Okay, the Dreamers. I got to get that straight. And if you want to join the conversation, it's 312-255-8408. We were talking before the show started. So I know this Sunday, it's the 25th. So if I have my weekends right, this was past weekend was the 18th, I think. So the next weekend is the 25th. I know some students are going to be talking at various masses and getting up there and educating people.
Yes, they're definitely going to do that. And these are going to be people who are personally experiencing that firsthand.
Right.
So people are going to be able to see what they struggle.
Yep.
And you are going to hear kids saying, like, I didn't even know I was illegal.
Really?
Until I got into high school and started applying for college.
Sure, because their parents probably would never have told them.
They will never tell them because obviously they don't want to have
that around as young age.
Have some sort of insecurity of not fitting in, you know, being bullied by students, et cetera, or whatever. But you're going to hear things like that are going to either shock you and be like, wow, and these kids are like people that want to, you know, work and have help the community, most of all, be role models to other children. And, I mean,
Maria, do you have any sense of how many are out there like that? I mean, I've heard numbers in Illinois, but you haven't heard anything in terms of the number of...
Like the exact number?
Yeah, curious. Yeah.
Personally, I don't know.
I know it's growing.
But it's a lot because, me and my group of friends, I know at least five.
You know at least five in your immediate circle of friends.
Exactly.
Right. And you grew up on the
southwest side
of Chicago and attended, what schools did you go to?
Went to Noble Street Charter High School and then UW-Madison.
Right. Okay.
And then I came back. Yeah.
So a number of your friends that went to Noble Street also were in the same similar situation.
Definitely.
And that's a very good school down that way, the charter school system.
I mean, they try to help them a lot as well, you know, trying to get them.
We're talking about the Dreamers, as they call them, and their plight as they try to engage in society and become productive members. And unfortunately, it seems like the law does not accommodate that desire, understanding that the actions of the parents who brought them here are undocumented as well. And so now we have a second generation of individuals who are undocumented, and this problem just seems to perpetuate itself. Are you familiar with the DREAM Act at all? Some of the what's happened?
I know some of it
because
I hear about it all the time. But it is the act itself is for people who came to the US without, you know, them making the decision.
Right.
Who are here, who are working and going to school, and they're showing that they're productive members of society.
Right.
Obviously, they're not going to give that to someone who's like, you know, doesn't want to pursue any education or it's doing something bad, obviously.
Right.
But these students are like top 10% of their classes. They work really hard. They want to change their life statuses because obviously their parents don't have that, I mean, that professional job that you know, had a better upbringing than anyone else. but they want to change.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've said for years on this program, and I think it's become increasingly apparent mm-hmm. that, I mean, our immigration laws clearly are broken. And I think this is one of those issues where, you know, in private conversations I have with my colleagues and mm-hmm. friends, that there's so much opportunity here for, if you will, to accommodate both sides. One side being we do need stronger borders. We do need protection on the borders. And mm-hmm. I think we all understand that and we get that. And that is definitely something that should be accomplished. At the same token, with the stronger borders, we still have the dilemma of the people who are here. And how do we move them from this in the shadow status
exactly.
to a more productive member of society?
Exactly.
And they're just kind of, I think you used the word, in limbo.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break here. We're talking to Maria Munoz about the DREAM Act, the Dreamers, as she's calling them, and what we can do about it. We'll talk about that when we come right back. Don't go away. We have a couple other subjects that we're going to be talking about today. This is Bob Gilligan. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. And so I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through, Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And she gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and says, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now. And I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298. Or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Okay, welcome back, everybody, to our conversation. We're here this morning. We're talking about a couple different topics. We're talking with Maria Munoz, who is representing some friends who are, I think it's probably not inappropriate to use the word victims of a situation that they find themselves in. They want to become productive members of society, but the laws right now are not accommodating that desire. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the Catholic Charities lawsuit and about this age-old question of marriage and what's going on in California and how that could affect Illinois. Maria, we were talking about, the plight of your friends and trying to become, get jobs and start families and become productive members of society and the American dream. But there's also another problem. They also, not only are they in the shadows, as you described, but mm-hmm. they're living also in fear of possibly mm-hmm. getting that tap on the shoulder or what have you, being deported.
Exactly. I mean.
Yeah. Have you gone through that at all? Or your friends are concerned about what? Driving?
Definitely. I mean, we probably have heard about the one kid who was driving his friend back home because his friend was drunk and he was illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a brother of one of my best friends, too. That's why I can know what their family goes through.
So did that person was that person deported?
No,
because
he actually proved that, he wasn't, obviously it was illegal because he didn't have his driver's license, but I feel it will be even worse for someone to have a car accident and someone dying than him taking that risk.
Got it. Okay.
So he took that risk. I mean, he got a lot of backup, you know, help, support from the schools because he was finishing. He actually just finished his degree this past June.
Okay.
But because people knew that he was a good person in the whole sense of him wanting to get an education, him trying to work and get ahead in life.
Mm-hmm.
But not only him. I mean, there's other kids that don't show themselves or, like, go out there or pursue anything else besides,
because, yeah, they're afraid.
Scared. They're scared of being deported.
Can you, you know, it's interesting because you're here today representing them. And for people who are listening, don't take this the wrong way. We were really hoping to talk to somebody personally affected, but it's very hard because they don't want to discuss this. And so you're representing them here today. And that's got to be a really difficult way to live your life. And now this fear of being deported.
I mean, that's the worst part because, first of all, you live in a country where you've been here for 15 years. And then your home country, who knows, they might be dealing with, like, different other things.
Right.
Criminals, drug lords, et cetera.
Right.
You don't know what's going on over there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that that's where we are in our society. And like I said, and politically, this is a really tough issue right now because I think you're seeing it at the macro level. You pick up the newspaper today, we have a debate about the budget, and that's very polarized. And the immigration debate is also very polarized. You have both sides kind of fighting it out. Unfortunately, it seemed like the DREAM Act was a bit of a middle ground, but I think the landscape has even shifted a little bit there. I know we tried back in December to enact the DREAM Act and came just a couple votes short, and now there's an effort again to do that. So what we want to have people know is that this Sunday at various parishes across the diocese, the Archdiocese, you may be hearing from some of Maria's friends who will be in the pulpit, who will get up there and say describe their situation and ask people for their understanding.
Exactly.
I think that's the way we have to start this issue. We have to start with an understanding, and if we can understand the humanity of the situation, perhaps we'd be more comfortable advocating on behalf of them, because it's hard. It's really hard for a lot of people. I understand the suburban dynamics of this issue in downstate and people being legal and illegal. Mm-hmm. It's hard, but I think that's where the faith community can have a unique perspective, that we all understand we're made in the image and likeness of God, and we try to continue to evangelize in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to conclude just while we wrap up this segment?
Well, I mean, my last words will be like what you were saying, get together, praying for these people, because obviously we're all humans.
We
all have our own, you know, personal goals and lives. And obviously we pray and we work hard. You know, something can come together and
just
help these people
like
out.
Everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. With that, then, I think we're going to take a break here in the next couple minutes or so. And what we're going to do is, when we come back, we're going to be talking to Ken Withrow from Evangelical Children and Family Services, as well as a member of our staff, Mary Lou Garvaccio, who's going to talk a little bit about the Catholic Charities lawsuit. So don't go away. We'll be right back. And Maria, thanks so much for coming
this
morning.
You.
And have
thank
a wonderful
you.
Day and a wonderful week.
You too. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
It all functions to the spirit, right?
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Do you need to train leaders and educate your assembly about the new words we will soon hear and say at Mass? Mystical Body, Mystical Voice DVD and Formation Program is a proven resource that gives church professionals tools with which to teach about the liturgy and about the new words of the Revised Roman Missal. Not only will this program help ease the transition to using the new Mass texts, but it will open the eyes of your assembly to the riches of the liturgy. Advent 2011 is fast approaching. To prepare your parish and provide them with an opportunity for ongoing faith and liturgical formation, call Liturgy Training Publications at 800-933-1800 or visit ltp.org. That's 800-933-1800 or visit ltp.org.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking about a lot of different public policy issues today. We just were privileged to hear from Maria Munoz talking about some of her friends as it relates to the DREAM Act. We're making a bit of a transition now in our show and talking about a different topic and something that's been in the news lately. It's been in the news a lot. Maybe not so much in Chicago, although it has been up here. Actually, yeah, it has been. It was in the Saturday's paper, as a matter of fact, a story about the civil unions, but it was a different take on the civil unions controversy. We're going to be talking about, it's really been a big story downstate, perhaps more so than up here. But anyway, we're on the line with us right now. We have Mary Lou Garvaccio of the Catholic Conference, who's with us. And also, we should have Ken Withrow from Evangelical Children and Family Services. Are we both there?
Yeah, I'm here, Bob.
Hi, Ken.
Evangelical Child and Family
Agency. Knew I goofed that up. Thanks,
so
Ken.
Close.
I was so close. The problem is we've been dealing with so many different child welfare agencies, and they all have slightly different derivatives of that children and family theme.
Right.
I knew I screwed that up. Sorry, Ken. Anyway, let's talk. Let's just delve right into it. You know, I think there's been a lot of attention about Catholic Charities agencies in Central and Southern Illinois up here, but we're not the only agency that's been affected by the civil unions law. Ken, your agency's been affected as well.
Yes, we share a lot of the same concerns, obviously, as our Catholic brother and sister agencies do, and we're frankly in the same boat.
Yeah. Maybe you can describe to our listeners, I know right now we're going to talk about this in a second, but with the lawsuit and all that, and that's been pursued by Catholic Charities, and I know you've been receiving some expert legal advice as well. So I guess to say that the future is promising for evangelical is just plain wrong. It looks pretty bleak right now, doesn't it?
Well, you know, we started back in 1950, our agency, and we started doing foster care right away. And when DCFS began in 1965, we were asked to take wards of the Department of Children and Family Services, which we were glad to do. But all along the line, you know, being a faith-based agency, we've said we carry out our mission with evangelicals, evangelical board members, staff, and foster adoptive parents. And all through this time, that's been okay with DCFS, mm-hmm. and now with the onset of this new law, what we're told is that it's not okay anymore.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that agencies such as Evangelical and Catholic Charities that practice their faith, and they practice it in accordance with the tenets of their teachings, which says that, you know, children are best served in a loving home with a mother and a father, don't deserve a contract from the state of Illinois anymore. I think that's the short message. Is that accurate?
You know, I think that is accurate.
Yeah.
You know, for us, of course, we're a little bit different in that we focus our mission through evangelicals. But the issue with DCFS is that, look, you know, you are an agent of the state if you take a contract for foster care, and then you have to treat people exactly the same way we do. And so you have to accept everybody, whether they're churched or unchurched people and so forth. And, you know, as a Christian faith-based agency, we don't want to convert to becoming a secular agency. We are choosing to continue to be a Christian faith-based agency, just as Catholic Charities is.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Mary Lou, let's talk a little bit about the lawsuit. I know we've talked about this on this air before, but bring us up to speed on what the latest is.
Sure. I'm not sure how far back.
That's the problem with this issue. You never know where to start.
Exactly. Well, I'll just kind of start with what the decision of the court was, just kind of briefly. That last month, the court in Sangamon County, the judge decided against Catholic Charities, as was mentioned. And so as a result of that decision, DCFS had sent out notices that they would hold intakes, new intakes to the agencies, to the Catholic Charities agencies, and they would start the planning for transition to other agencies. That the transition talk has been going on, but in the meantime, the very latest is that the attorneys for the Catholic Charities have just this the other day, last week, filed in the same court in Sangamon County, filed a motion to reconsider the judgment that the judge made in Sangamon County and to vacate his summary judgment order in favor of the state. And along with that will be a motion to ask for a stay of that judgment so that while hopefully this is all being considered again, there will be no change in the status quo until there is a final decision.
So in layman's terms, I think what we're saying in so many words with the Catholic Charities attorneys through Thomas Moore are saying is that we would like the judge to reconsider his previous decision. Mm-hmm. And secondarily, could it be possible for the state to continue to refer new foster children to Catholic Charities agencies during the time when we can further appeal?
Right, right. Yeah. It would be to ask for DCFS to continue as it was before the decision was made.
Right, right. Uh-huh. And it appears, though, that the state, as far as we can tell, is making plans to transition those children at least out of Catholic Charities and can at your agency as well. Is that, that's kind
yeah,
of
where
that, we're at,
that's
right?
Correct. We've been notified. There's two agencies involved that are going to be assuming our entire caseload. We have about 243 kids, and they will be going to Children's Home and Aid Society and also Youth Children's Bureau, and they will also essentially be assuming our foster families and our caseworkers so that the children in many cases will continue in the same foster homes and with the same caseworkers.
Ken, what will be the future of your agency then after the state-funded foster care contract is ended?
Well, we're a pro-life agency, as is Catholic Charities. We have a pregnancy support services program, which we will continue. Mm-hmm. We do long-term work with women facing unplanned pregnancies. We do some international adoption and domestic adoption counseling. We have a intact family services program where we work with stabilizing families who are at risk of losing their children because of founded abuse and neglect reports in DuPage County. And also, we have what's called a Safe Families Program, which is essentially a private foster care program. So, although we will be reduced in size radically, we continue our mission of caring for kids and placing them in Christian homes and working with their parents to help them get better. We just won't have publicly funded foster care in the way that we've had.
So, you have a private foster care agency function.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure you currently employ many people, and that will be reduced drastically because those that function will be shifted to these other agencies away from yours. And so I assume that your staff will be remarkably smaller.
Yes.
And doing what you do because it'll be the workload will be reduced as well, and that's unfortunate because our state needs. We need faith-based agencies involved in child welfare, whether it's publicly funded or privately funded. When we reduce the child welfare function to just a secular mission, I don't think that's good for the children in the system. I don't think that's good for the adults that are part of the foster parent network. And I think that's a step in the wrong direction. And unfortunately, that appears to be where our state leaders are headed. I personally never thought it would get there. I'm sometimes I'm wrong.
Yep.
And I know for everybody listening, Ken was very involved with the legislation that we put forth that would allow the current practice that we are engaged in and to refer same-sex applicants to another agency, but unfortunately that legislation did not pass. And I think we've talked about that many times, and that's unfortunate. So now I think Catholic Charities is also still fighting in court. Prospects are who knows? You know, the court process is always full of unanticipated events, and so God willing, maybe there'll be a change of heart of the judge or the appellate judge. But it's still going to be difficult because I think in this scenario, the governor's office and the Department of Children and Family Services control so much of the outcome of the issue that it's that's a hard thing to overcome. Ken, any other closing comments you want to make about the future of this or things that we may have not touched upon?
Oh yeah, I think I would really like to encourage people of faith to continue caring for these kids and mm-hmm. becoming licensed foster families, because you know the faith families, the people of faith can still bring the kids to church, to youth groups, to get them to know God's love for them, what the Bible says about truth and morality and so on. And so I don't think in any way, no matter what happens, Bob, that Christian moms and dads should shy away from taking care of these abused and neglected kids that have come from terrible situations. And we as the church have an opportunity to care for the kids and for their parents and to show them God's love as well. And I don't think that should ever stop. I think we should redouble our efforts to be involved in caring for these kids.
I agree. I think it's going to be an interesting couple years ahead of us in terms of how we do that, because it's going to be different. The challenges are going to be different. I have yet to speak to the new Catholic Charities directors out in Rockford, but I think that's the route they're going. I know that's the route you're going. We don't know what's going to happen with the remaining Catholic Charities agencies in Illinois, whether they'll prevail on this legal case. But if they don't, I think you're right, Ken. It's incumbent upon the faith community to stay in it's the ministry,
yes,
of serving the poor and vulnerable children and their parents, mm-hmm, as well. I think we often lose sight of that. I mean, the natural parents also need that, as you said, the healing grace of God, and the children as well as the foster parents. I have often said in this thing, we were doing this before the state of Illinois got involved, and we'll be doing it long after too. You know,
yes,
it just maybe in a different function, and things change, things go in cycles, so maybe smaller is better for now, who knows. There's a reason for all this, and someday we'll find out what it is, but we may not find that out anytime soon. Ken, thanks so much for joining us. Mary Lou, same thanks for you. Thanks to you for joining us as well. We're going to take a quick break here. It's coming up on 9:31 a.m. on this day, Monday, the 19th of September. We're going to be talking about Prop 8 and what's going on out in the state of California with regard to the lawsuit Perry versus Schwarzenegger. When we come back, don't go away. I'm sure this will be a very interesting conversation. The number is 312-255-8408. We'll be right back.
Join Team Catholic Charities for the 2011 AIDS Run Walk in Grant Park on Saturday, October 1st as an active participant or sponsoring member. 100% of the funds raised by the team are returned to Catholic Charities HIV/AIDS case management programs, food pantry, and ministry in Cook and Lake Counties. For more information, please call the Catholic Charities Office of Volunteer Relations at 312-655-7322. Together, we can make a difference.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
Are you constantly on the go? Then stay connected to your church by visiting CatholicNewWorld.com and sign up to follow us on Twitter.
That's CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and if you haven't already, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We've been talking this morning about a couple different topics. We're talking about the DREAM Act a little bit this morning with Maria Munoz, and we had also an update on the lawsuit involving Catholic Charities' actions against the state of Illinois in order to try to continue providing foster care services, state-funded foster care services, under the new Civil Unions Act. And that case, as we've just heard, is now under appeal or asking for an appeal. And now we're going to make a transition, but not a large transition. It's actually under the same sort of subject matter. We have on the phone from us, we're very lucky this morning to have with us Ron Prentice, who is with Protect Marriage California. Correct, Ron?
That's correct.
Do I have the title right? Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
Great. I know it's a little early probably out. Are you out on the left coast there?
Yes, I am. I'm out in California.
It's a little early out there, I'm sure. Ron, we were talking before the break. I'm not sure if you followed this at all, but what's going on in Illinois? I mean, the legislature enacted during a lame duck session legislation regarding civil unions. And civil unions, as we were describing it in Illinois, was kind of same-sex marriage light. It affords all the protections and benefits to a same-sex couple as found in a traditional marriage. And so that's created some complexities for us here. And the first arena we've seen it in is in the area of state contracts with foster care and adoption. And it looks like we're not going to be able to continue doing that much further. I know out in California, you've been experiencing a lot of different issues out there. And you're involved with the Perry Schwarzenegger case, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And now
called Perry v. Brown.
Obviously, after the new governor there that you have. Ron, I wanted to talk a little bit this morning about, is it our understanding that now you are in the court system right now trying to file legal papers to, represent the state because the attorney general and the governor will or will not? Can you explain that?
Sure. We went soon after the people of California voted in 2008 to protect marriage and traditional marriage in the Constitution. We were first in state court, and neither the governor nor the attorney general defended the vote of the people then. And so we stood as the proponents of the initiative in defense of the Constitution and the people of California. And then we went into the federal district court, and as you know, we got a horrible decision from the district court and appealed it to the Ninth Circuit. And now the Ninth Circuit has said, prior to moving any further, we must know whether California law allows you to stand in defense of it because once again, neither the governor nor the attorney general will. And so 2 weeks ago, we were in the California Supreme Court again, and we believe that we will fare quite well with a decision from the Supreme Court given up to the Ninth Circuit saying that yes, especially since the attorney general and governor will not defend the Constitution, it really is an unjust place for the court to be left in, and it disallows, or I should say it allows the government to provide a pocket veto of anything that people pass if indeed the attorney general won't defend it. And so we expect a good decision from the California Supreme Court, and then the Ninth Circuit will begin its consideration of the merits of Prop 8.
We're talking to Ron Prentice of Protect Marriage California. The number is 312-255-8408. That's 312-255-8408. Okay, Ron, stupid question time. How can a constitutionally elected official, not only one, but two, not do their fiduciary duty to represent the state? I don't understand that.
Well, I don't think anyone understands it. And I guess it has happened once before in California history, probably two or three decades ago. But in this case, we have also, here's the comparison, we have a county clerk in a county of California that is unwilling to participate in licensing marriages to gays if it were to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear the government of California say, well, that's horrendous. You must fulfill your duty to the Constitution.
Right.
And yet at the same time, it's so ironic because we've got the two the one attorney general, the main attorney of the state, saying, I won't. And so we don't know what we might be able to do with this legally in the long run, but we hope actually we might have some recourse.
Who's the attorney general in California now?
She's newly elected. Right. Her name is Kamala Harris. She was formerly the district attorney of San Francisco.
Oh, okay. And obviously the governor's Jerry Brown, and so now the case is Perry v. Brown.
Correct.
Okay. I read, was that last summer? It was Judge Walker's original decision, which was really an interesting read. I made it three quarters of the way through and I stopped.
it's a fictional read.
It really is. Right. Maybe you're closer to it than I am. It's been a couple, probably almost a year since I read it. Yeah. I mean, basically, my recollection of that decision, and Judge Walker was the federal district judge. Correct?
Yes.
That
correct.
Heard the case. And you know, my impression of it was it wasn't very grounded in the law. It seemed to be more or less his impressions based on social science research that he had picked and chosen to write about. Fair?
Well, fair. Actually, an understatement. Within his decision, there is actually very limited reference to the law, and those references are given to misinterpretation. I'm not an attorney, but I know that we expected that the federal district court would issue only a summary judgment based on the write-ups of briefs, but instead Chief Judge Von Walker decided to hold a trial.
Right.
And once again, because of the harassment that is so common to folks who stand for traditional marriage, we found it difficult to put people on the stand who were willing to be public, especially when there was a threat that it would be televised. We were able to, by virtue of a Supreme Court decision, not have it televised, but still, we decided only to put two witnesses on the stand, whereas the other side put on 12.
Right.
And and the trial's content, therefore, was nothing other than subjective opinions by homosexual people who happen to be professors at Stanford or Harvard or Yale. But still, when you refer to social science research, they referred only to limited social science research, mm-hmm. which really has never been defended well. And so all of the legal precedent and case law is on the side of traditional marriage, as is obviously most of, if not all of, the social science research. But Judge Walker referred only to the testimony, the subjective testimony of those witnesses, and never referred to the law itself.
We're talking with Ron Prentice from Protect Marriage California, who is very much involved with Perry v. Brown, which is the Prop 8 case out there that's pending in the court system. And we're going to talk further with Ron after we take these brief messages. If you have a question for Ron or want to get your opinion out there, please let us know. The number is 312-255-8408. We'll be right back.
September is National Hunger Action Month, and Catholic Charities needs you to join the fight to end hunger in our communities. Organize a food drive in your neighborhood, donate to one of Catholic Charities' many food and nutrition programs, or sponsor one of our food pantries. Visit www.catholiccharities.net/hunger or call us at 312-655-7315 to find out how you can be a hunger hero. Join the fight to end hunger today.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Ron Prentice of Protect Marriage California. This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference. We're talking about what's going on with the Perry v. Brown case out in California. That is the case that's being litigated that defines marriage between one man and one woman. Ron, can you give us kind of one of the reasons we wanted to have you on today is because I was when I was reading about this the other day is I want to shed some more light on refusal of publicly elected officials to, in my opinion, to do their fiduciary duty in representing the state. But you've talked about that. Now, if I understand you correctly, if Protect Marriage gets involved, if the case goes your way, if the decision goes your way, Protect Marriage will be representing traditional marriage, correct?
That's correct, yes, at the Ninth Circuit.
At the Ninth Circuit, which is a federal, that's in the federal arena
yes.
now. And right. Can you give us some timetables on when, there's a lot of speculation out there that the case, Perry v. Brown, the Prop 8 case, could be going before the Supreme Court during the U.S. Supreme Court around election time. Is that possible? Election 2012 is what I'm talking about, which would have significant impact on the debate in terms of the presidential candidates on where they are on this topic.
Well, that's right. It is a possibility. The California Supreme Court has 90 days, so they essentially have another 2.5 months or so before their deadline to issue their response to the request by the Ninth Circuit as to whether or not we have legal standing. Again, we expect that they will rule in our favor, and then the Ninth Circuit will pick it up perhaps later near the end of this year, early into 2012. And there's no deadline or timeline for them to make a ruling.
Mm-hmm.
However, we don't have high expectations as the chief judge of the Ninth Circuit of the three-judge panel that will be hearing our case is Stephen Reinhardt, and he is the most overturned judge by the U.S. Supreme Court in history.
Really?
And so he's extremely liberal, and I think he's very much aching to rule on this case, but we don't have the timeline. It may be that once the Ninth Circuit issues a ruling, and it could be spring of 2012, that we will definitely appeal, there will be an appeal one side or the other.
Right. Right.
To the U.S. Supreme Court, and then it may very well be picked up by them prior to the November 2012 elections, yes. We don't know that there would be a decision any sooner than spring of 2013, but it should be in the hands of the U.S. Supreme Court by the time of the general election.
Wow. And so this Judge Reinhardt is the most, it's most likely that he, is that for certain that he would have that case?
Yes. We have already done oral arguments before that three-judge panel, and so they are well in place.
He would get it again. And then does the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, then they have the option of taking that case. They wouldn't have to take the Prop 8 case. But is the general consensus that it's such a highly important issue that they would have to take it?
Well, again, they don't have to take it, but we believe that they will because this is essentially a state's rights case. This was the state of California, the people of California, that according to our Constitution did a people's initiative, mm-hmm. and it should stand. And it doesn't by any means contradict federal law. And so we believe that this is an excellent state's rights case and that the justices will rule in our favor at the Supreme Court. At the same time, and I believe it's the first district court on the East Coast, there is in that court the Defense of Marriage Act. And so it may be coincidental, so to speak, that that might be reaching the Supreme Court at around the same time.
I was gonna bring that up too. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that. You're probably more familiar than I am. I follow these things on a very, very shallow level. I follow them, but not in terms of detail. But that's the case out of Massachusetts, correct?
That's correct.
Okay,
yes.
And that's the one that would be going up. And now, I don't know. Tangentially, is that now? Can you clarify? Now, the Obama administration has made some comments also about the Defense of Marriage Act, and it's not defending that law as well.
That's correct. They're unwilling. The Department of the legal team of President Obama has actually been directed not to defend it because Obama takes issue with it as well.
Ron, maybe you're just a question to you. Are you a little surprised that doesn't make the headlines or that it doesn't seem to be a big issue? The fact that the president's legal team has decided not to, I would argue, do its job, not to defend the law. And the case out in California, do you have two elected officials there who have decided not to perform their job? Why isn't that a bigger issue? That's startling.
Well, you're right. It's not a bigger issue because mainstream media is than most, Bob, just not willing to track those things that disagree with their liberal direction.
Yeah, that really is shocking, and it's unfortunate that seems to be the way that the way this issue is going. It does seem like the mainstream media. Well, I know the mainstream media is definitely in there. Ron, thanks so much for what you're doing out in California, and it seems like from your comments, I know I talk to my colleagues out in California from time to time, and it's very interesting to see what's going on across the country with the whole question of marriage and civil unions, and I'm not sure if you follow much of it on the national level, but it seems to us here in Illinois, looking at the rest of the country, that the gay rights movement seems to be trending more towards activity in the legislative arena and perhaps less so on these initiatives and referendums defining marriage between one man and one woman. I know Minnesota has a question in 2012, but I'm not aware. Oh, I think North Carolina just put it on the ballot. Yeah, they did the other day. That's right.
Yes.
It seems like they're having more success in the legislative arena than in the initiative and referendum arena. Do you think that's where they're going to go in the future?
Well, I think they'll definitely attempt to go legislatively and yet be very specific about what states they'll attempt that in because it is legislatures in many states that are putting traditional marriage before themselves for a vote on behalf of the people of the state. In 31 states, mm-hmm. whenever the people have voted, they have voted to protect traditional marriage. And so the gay agenda is to approach those legislatures that they think are soft on it, but most importantly, the courts. And so when they can put it before the courts, they'll do it, and they have unlimited resources. This legal battle in California since the election has cost approximately $20 million for the other side. And so there's unlimited resources, and they will continue to do it by bringing in the candidates they want to the legislature.
Yep.
Or putting it before the courts.
Yep. And that's what's going on here in Illinois. I have noticed that I think there are now three openly gay members of the General Assembly. I notice more and more running for office.
Yes.
I look at the contributions to pro-gay groups. Ours is called Equality Illinois. I'm sure you have Equality California out there.
Yes.
Other, you know, Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, something called the Fairness Fund. I went through them the other day. It is amazing to see the money that's coming even into Illinois over this issue. And when the money is given, and I think this name probably rings familiar to you, Mr. Tim Gill has been here.
Yes.
And has written some checks as well.
Yes.
For listeners out there, Tim Gill is out of Denver, Colorado, I believe, who is is he a millionaire or a billionaire? He's very wealthy.
Yeah.
Who gives money to pro-gay groups all over the country. He's been instrumental in passage of everything they've done all throughout the country. So the money is astronomical. And I think that's the reason I wanted to talk to you here this morning is, you can't say it over and over again strong enough. If you're concerned about this issue, you need to be involved in the political arena. You need to get involved and stand out there. And it's tough because the media is not going to be with you. But I think by and large, I think we have more people, if you will, on our side than on the other side. The other side's more organized, though.
Well, we absolutely have more people on our side, and we saw that in California when people came out for Proposition 8 in 2008, and the state was covered with signs and people on street corners, and it was all pro-family, pro-traditional marriage folks, and we're hoping to be able to inspire them time and again because they're recognizing in California it's an ugly battle. And it will remain ugly until we can win these court decisions as well. And yes, there's tremendous amounts of money, and not just from those with a specific gay agenda, but the Service Employees International Union, the labor unions, the teachers unions are all out there in defense of the gay agenda as well. And so that's why in California we're working to limit the power of labor unions as well.
Really? So you see SEIU and the California Teachers Association also being part of this?
That's absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Millions of dollars against Prop 8 and then continuing to work with the pro-gay agenda to elect candidates for those perspectives.
I was part of a candidates forum recently, and it was interesting. These were people who are putting themselves forward to run for office, and that was one of this was a conservative group, and that was one of the questions they kept asking all these candidates: will you forego any contributions from SEIU and in Illinois, it's called the IEA, the Illinois Education Association.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating to me because they were very concerned about what you just said, because they do support, in our case, anti-Catholic positions on life and on particularly on marriage. So you see that in California as well.
Oh, absolutely. And in California, corporations. And so they're such as Google and Apple and Pacific Gas and Electric gave to the No on 8 campaign. And so we have another people's initiative that will be on the June 2012 ballot that will attempt to limit mandatory political dues funding from union members and corporations directly into campaigns.
Really? Very
yes.
Interesting. Good for you guys. Well, we'll see how that goes, because I know that's a play out of a little bit of what Mr. Walker was trying to do up in Wisconsin. Not exactly, but some similar things. Ron, any closing comments from you out in California that things we have not covered?
No, thanks for the opportunity. I would just say that it's a very expensive battle. You can find out more by going to protectmarriage.com. And we continue to recognize that the cost will exceed for us $15 million. So far, we've raised about 10 of that. And we getting all the way through the U.S. Supreme Court in 2013, We'll just appreciate the prayers of the listeners and any financial help we can receive.
And Ron, give us one more time. If people want to make contributions, they want to find out more about what's going on, the name of your organization is Protect Marriage California, and give them the information on how to get the to find out where you guys are.
Right. It is on the website. It is protectmarriage.com.
Great.
All spelled out.
Thanks very much, Ron. Thanks for joining
Thank
us this
you, Bob.
Morning. You were very informative, and that's exactly what I wanted to talk about, which was just to bring attention to the fact that here you have two constitutionally elected people in California who seemingly refuse to do their jobs to protect the citizens and what they want to do. That is also happening here in our state in Illinois. We've seen that with the civil unions issue. We continue to see that at other issues as well. So it's all that more important to get engaged politically. This is Bob Gilligan. Thanks for listening, everybody. I think we had a really good show. Thanks to Maria Munoz for coming in, and for Mary Lou and Ken Withrow as well. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll be back on the third Monday of October.